Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. I'm your host, Jason Tardik, and welcome to the pre-market trading segment. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what you can expect from today's guest, an update from the market, and an update from my personal life. If you guys haven't seen the news, we now have two episodes every week. We have Trading Secrets and what we are calling More Than Money on Thursdays. So go check out our More Than Money episode with Corporate Natalie last week. And this week will be all about health, nutrition, and supplements. The supplements to buy, why you should buy them, and the things you should look for in the label from an expert. So that is coming up Thursday. Remember to give us 5 stars and let me know in the reviews if you think we should have a different name than More Than Money, because whoever does name that episode and the one we stick with, we will have a prize for. Speaking of prize, Talk Money to Me is now on shelves. You could buy it on Amazon right now for, I think, about $23. Make sure when you do, send us a receipt to tradingsecrets@jasontardik.com to be entered to come to our book wrap party in New York City, which is going to be absolutely electric. We have the piano player already booked. The booze will be flowing and there will be some familiar faces there. So that will be a blast. Now, this episode, we have Kit Keenan, a Bachelor legend. We talk about her time on The Bachelor. She's the daughter of Cynthia Raleigh, very, very internationally famous fashion designer. Ever heard of her? And we get into all the weeds of everything from her time on The Bachelor to time as a creator, the discussion of Nepo Baby, and so much more. So we dive into all the things. And even financial therapy comes up in this episode. So more to come with Kit Keenan, an absolute boss for her age and what she's doing and how she's doing it. I think you're going to be blown away also by her disposition and the insight she has. Just so much. I feel like, you know, some people in this world, you're like, have they lived a lot of lives before their actual age and time on this planet? And I feel like Kit has. Very experienced is what it feels like. Okay, a couple updates from the market. Just read a recent report here. This was from Edelman Financial Engines. They surveyed more than 2,000 people regarding their attitudes about wealth, and around a quarter of them said they feel less satisfied with the amount of money they have because of social media. And a third said that they have spent more than they could afford trying to keep up with the Joneses on Instagram and other apps. They did more studies saying that time on social media creates more opportunities to feel bad about ourselves and our financial picture. This is from Isabel Barrow, Director of Financial Planning at Edelman Financial Engines, and the survey found a strong link between overspending and time spent on social media. Again, this comes to financial therapy. This becomes to behavioral-based budgeting, which is something I created, where we actually look at our behaviors and how we spend. All of this is in the book. So whether you are single or in a relationship, this is a personal finance book that is for you. And these are stats that we know are impacting our livelihood and our wealth. Little update from my life. Holy shit. Last week was a dream come true with the launch of Talk Money to Me. We were a number one new release in the money and budgeting management section. We were a number one new release in love and romance. And we were a number one new release in personal finance, also hitting the bestseller list on all three of those. So that is such an honor. What a success. And it was fun doing things like Good Morning America and NBC Now, all the way to Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen in between. And we are finishing our book tour this week in Boston. I have a feeling it's going to be something else. I can't wait for that show. But you know what? Enough of me. Enough of this book. Let's get in to why we're here. And that is the one and only Kit Keenan. Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. Today, I am joined by Bachelor Nation alum turned fashion designer, home chef, and content creator, Kit Keenan. Many of you know Kit from her time on Matt James' season of The Bachelor, but what you may not know is that Kit is no stranger to the spotlight before going on the show. Kit was raised in New York City by her famous fashion designer mother, Cynthia Raleigh. Growing up, watching her mother succeed in the fashion industry gave her access and perspective on the fashion industry that many individuals would never have until much later in their careers. Now, a few years later in her career, Kit has branded herself as Gen Z's answer to Martha Stewart by leveraging her knowledge in the fashion industry and adding a twist of her love of cooking. She has been entertaining her nearly 600,000 followers on IG and TikTok with fashion-focused content and hosting a social media cooking series, What's Kit Cooking, where she shares her irresistible recipes to her audience. We're going to touch on all areas of fashion, what's trending, cooking, the pros and cons of growing up in the spotlight with a highly successful parent, and all the career navigation. And possibly we'll see if I can get there a little bit of the money behind Kit's career. Kit, thank you so much for being on Trading Secrets.
Hi. Ready to go? It's so awkward hearing like my bio.
Yeah.
When you but I love it.
When you hear it though, what's like your first initial gut? Are you like, wow, that's great?
I always feel like it's all like I'm an imposter syndrome majorly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you don't think, when you say that, do you think your work doesn't live up to everything you've done?
Or I'll never feel content. I'll always feel like I'm like, I need more.
Okay.
I need more validation.
I have questions about so many different things, but I'm gonna go off topic a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people deal with that in their careers and stuff. So what do you think the root of that is?
I definitely think it's gendered. I think women are taught to not celebrate their accomplishments as much as men are. And I also think it comes from the fact that my industry is very looked down upon. And being an influencer was never like a super, you know, high ranking job, or like nobody really wanted to use that term. It was kind of a dirty word. Mm-hmm. And being an influencer and working in social media, I feel like I'm always having to prove myself and prove that my career is legitimate. So I think that's where it comes from as well.
Part of like one thing I've wanted to do since the day one of my first like influencing deal was just talk about the money behind it. And the reason, if I dig deep into like the psychology behind it, I've wanted to talk about the money behind it because there was such a discount factor with saying you're an influencer. Like my buddies would like laugh and joke and be like, you're pathetic. And I'd be like, all right, you know what? You want to know how much I made on that? And they're like, oh shit, wait, what? And this was like 2018 now. Mm-hmm. I think that tide has turned a little bit, but there's still this connotation with influencer. When people do ask you what you do, you meet someone at a bar or wherever you're at, do you use the word influencer? How do you describe it? Like, what's your answer to that?
I used to hate the word influencer and I wouldn't say it. Yeah. Like, I would try to use other terms.
Sure.
But now I'm like, yeah, I'm an influencer. Sometimes I'll say content creator. But yeah, I've like owned that word now. I'm so proud of like how far I've grown in my career. And I love the word now. I think it's really cool. I mean, hopefully like it should be a good word. Your job is literally to influence people, hopefully in a positive way.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great title. I just think that it's gotten so much negative views in the past that now it's a little bit tainted, but hopefully we can change that.
Exactly. There is some kind of stigma with it. And for me, it's like, there's a bunch of different things I do and I have ownership of some businesses and stuff, but influencing is a part of my income source. Mm-hmm. And I still have yet to build up that courage. Like if I meet someone, I am never starting with
I do think it's a little bit,
it's different as like a man, right?
Yeah, I do.
And someone who's like, I'm in my 30s, or like, what are you doing? Like, you're an influencer? Yeah. What do you mean you're an influencer?
But like, think about like Mr. Beast. Like,
oh my God. I mean,
there's so many people that, there's amazing male influencers.
Incredible. Amazing. I mean,
older too.
And they could do things through impact, education, insight. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the list is endless. And every year I always ask guests about how they do, how they got there, some of the money. So every episode I do a Jason Tells All where my co-host asks me everything. Like, how much did you make on influencing? How much? So I share all that stuff. And the numbers, it's a big ass industry and there's a lot of money in it. We'll talk about that in a second. I want to get back to where I was going to start right from the get-go was that you hold two big titles in the Bachelor franchise. Do you know what those titles are? Do you know what your claim to fame is in Bachelor Nation? You got two.
I know one of them is that I think I was the youngest person to ever be on the show.
That was one of them. You nailed it.
What's the second one?
Chris Harrison said that you are the best ever dressed individual to ever come from the Bachelor franchise. Did you know that?
Wow.
So those are two big titles to hold. Huge titles to hold. Yeah. Were you the youngest ever or no?
I think I was the youngest ever. I mean, I was 21 when I went on the show. Mm-hmm. So that I think that would make sense.
Did you, so 21, you go on the show, mm-hmm. you know, you have a direction of what you're thinking about doing, especially with your mom's industry success. Was reality TV in your future? Like, was that always the goal? I'm going to be 21 when I'm eligible and get on reality TV?
I did not see that coming at all. And okay. in fact, when I told my mom, she was like, I don't think this is a great idea. Just because I grew up in the spotlight in quotation marks because of her business and like just going to events and being in like the fashion and art scene in New York City. But it was more about her brand being like in the spotlight and less okay. about our family. Like, I think we've always had a more private family life.
Sure.
And so when I got the opportunity to go on The Bachelor, I think my family was like, we don't know about this.
Because of like the risk it could bring to yeah, everything else.
I mean, it's a yeah. huge risk.
Huge.
Like, image-wise, anything could happen.
Right.
And I always say, like, when people ask me about that aspect, I'm always like, well, you know, they can't make you out to be someone you're not.
Yeah.
But they can, like, cherry pick certain sure. parts of your personality and skew it. So, of course, what, you know, what they call a bad edit, like, I could have gotten a bad edit.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is always a huge risk. But for me, I was like, I think I felt somewhat trapped, like, within my mom's shadow in a certain way. And I sure. wanted to do something that was completely on my own. Not that I'll ever, like, escape from her legacy. And I'm so proud of to, like, be associated with her, obviously. Yeah. But I do think that I wanted to do something that was, like, maybe a little bit rebellious, like, a yeah. little bit on my own. And so I took the risk, and at the end of the day, she was like super supportive of me.
Yeah.
And thank gosh, like I came out pretty unscathed, but I do think it was a big risk.
Okay. Here's risk in business. This is a question I got for you. I ended up losing my job because of social media, reality TV after like a year of being on mm-hmm. like this, you know, the whole spotlight thing. If you went to hometowns, do you think your mom would have taken the risk for her company and gone on or no?
I've asked her this question now.
Yeah.
And she has always been like, yeah, of course I would have done that.
Sure. Yeah.
But she would have hated it. Like yeah. she would have hated it so much. I just think that she saw like how great of a person Matt was and
yeah.
she knew that we had a connection.
Yeah.
So seeing that, she was like, yeah, of course I would have like done that for you and supported you. But at the end of the day, it's like so scary.
Yeah.
And she probably like, I don't know. It's a big risk.
Fortunately, those lines did not cross.
Yeah.
When you look at your career now with all the influencing that you're doing and the cooking stuff and the fashion work and you're building your brand, do you think you'll go back on reality TV? Is it in your future? Are you against it?
I'm not against it. I don't know about like where I would fit now.
Yeah.
I think obviously I'm still single, mm-hmm. so I would love to meet the love of my life. I don't know if that's on a reality show.
Sure.
But I do think like the format that is The Bachelor.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure that that would work again for me unless like I was The Bachelorette.
Okay.
Of course, I would love that. But like also
that's
I
a good
just
career
think
move.
That there needs to be like multiple options for me there.
Okay.
More of like a Love Island sort of situation or setting.
Got it.
Realistically, I think like if I was going to go back on reality TV, it would probably be in like the cooking
okay.
sphere.
So in a like more challenge based, you would be open to being The Bachelorette, but like Bachelor in Paradise, probably not.
I don't know. Options are open.
Options are open.
And I'm saying that format would probably work better for me.
Okay. I got that. No. That makes sense. All right. Yeah. Great answer. Possibly in your future, possibly not. We'll see about that. You had talked about the fact you wanted to kind of carve out your own lane when you went on reality TV. Mm-hmm. Looking back at it now, do you think that risk paid off for your career when you think about the moves you've made?
Yeah, I do think, like my mom said to me this weekend, she was like, I feel like I do meet people now that don't even realize that you're my daughter. But again, I think that this is like the whole conversation about being a Nepo baby.
Yeah.
Which is that like there's everything that I have gained in my life is somewhat associated with my mom and her success. And there's not a way for me to just completely like separate myself from that. So I think that in some ways, like going on The Bachelor and doing that was me trying to kind of go against like what I was taught about privacy and like protecting my brand.
Yeah.
But I do think that like, yeah, I think that I'll always be like my mother's daughter.
Yeah. Interesting. I have heard you talk about this publicly. Sometimes it's difficult being coined a Nepo baby. And then I heard of...
I don't think it's difficult being coined
difficult.
A Nepo,
okay.
Nepo baby.
How would you define it then?
Well, first off, I think that there is a little bit of confusion about the word. And I think that people who grew up with privilege aren't necessarily Nepo babies.
Yeah, I don't think that's what it is.
So I know I grew up with privilege and I know that my career is like does slightly overlap with my mom's,
yeah.
But it's not as if I'm a fashion designer,
right.
And therefore I'm a Nepo baby because my mom's a fashion designer and
right.
I became a fashion designer. That is like the classic definition of it.
Yeah.
So like if someone's dad is an actor and so then they get auditions and then they
yes.
get to become an actor.
Yeah.
But I do know that my mom's career and the way that I grew up has allowed me to have the career that I do now.
Right. In my book, Talk Money to Me, I talk about the importance of understanding your money, but making sure you're collaborating with your partner. So if you are looking for a top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app, look at Monarch Money. It gives you comprehensive views of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/secrets. Now with Talk Money to Me, the big thing is focusing on collaboration. Did you know that money issues are the leading cause of divorce? Monarch, the top rated personal finance app, also has a built-in collaboration feature so you and your partner can be on the same page while still managing your own accounts. After trying out Monarch Money for myself, I understand why it's the top rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/secrets. That's monarchmoney.com/secrets for your extended 30-day free trial. I want to ask a question about this. I listened to the one podcast you did with your mom, and I thought it could help people back at home that are struggling with their careers. She quoted Eleanor Roosevelt. I actually just put the quote on Threads because I loved it so much. But she said in a podcast you guys had, no one can make you feel inferior without your consent. And I think that leads into a little bit of this conversation. So someone who might have dealt with that in the past, what advice would you give for people back home that regardless of the situation is like, maybe there's not one person listening that's a Nepo baby, but in times they feel inferior, they feel like maybe they're in the shadow or they feel like they're living behind something else, whether it's their boss or their colleague, whatever it is, what advice would you give to them?
I mean, I think this goes back to our initial conversation about like feeling like you have to prove something.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's really self-acceptance and like learning that you are enough,
yeah.
Which is like something that you got to do in therapy. And I'm working on it. I think we all are. But at the end of the day, I think it's like looking back, even if you have to write it down, like your accomplishments, what you're proud of yourself for, and then thinking about like your big long-term goals,
yeah.
Is really helpful with that because you're just like, this is everything I've done. It's mm-hmm. almost like a, you know, a roster of everything you've accomplished and that you're proud of yourself for. And then look long term, like past whoever you feel is dwarfing you.
Yeah.
Look past them and think about like, what if that person wasn't there? what would my goal be and work towards that goal. And hopefully that will help you like get past that, I guess, just like barrier that you feel with that person.
No, that makes perfect sense. I think that's good advice for anyone that feels stuck or there's noise out there. Get past that barrier, do your thing. And I think you're right. Even like personal work helps professional work. Mm-hmm. So doing the self-work to understand your value will help your professional navigation and creation when you're doing what you want to do, how you want to do it. I think that's huge.
I think it's also about thinking about like your value outside of work.
Yeah.
You know, I think in our society, people are generally quantified by their job. And at the end of the day, it's like you are so much more than that.
Yeah.
And if you do that personal work to realize that, it can only help you in your professional life.
Totally. I think people are also quantified by like numbers, right? How much do you make? How are you doing financially? Things like that. Mm-hmm. What would you say your overall, you know, of course, your family's had big success monetarily and publicly. What is your relationship with money? Like, are you someone that's like, I need that next paycheck? Are you someone that's like, money means nothing to me? I'm just focused on A, B, or C. How would you define your relationship with just money?
This is another conversation that definitely needs to be unpacked in therapy. My mom grew up with not a lot of money. She grew up pretty poor. Her mom was like a stay-at-home mom and art teacher. And my grandpa, her dad, was a science teacher. So she's had a lot of success, but I think that she's always had a strained relationship with money. And like growing up with that was definitely changed the way I thought about money. And then my dad also like has struggled with money over my life.
Okay.
My parents are divorced and he, like when I was going to his house and growing up, we struggled with money. So I think that people have seen my life from sort of like the storytelling point of view, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Which is like the Gossip Girl lifestyle, privilege, money, private school, all of that stuff. But I also think I have like a little bit of a balance there with growing up with my dad and his like career and problems with money. And then also my mom's like actual mentality around her success has made me a little bit more grounded than maybe I like could have been if I was just like showered.
If it wasn't that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. All right. We have made a safe word for all the listeners out here. The safe word is London. Mm-hmm. So if we say London, next topic, and you could use the safe word at any time. Kit and I were at the Grey Goose Suite yesterday at US Open, and she was like, I don't know, I'm a little nervous for this podcast. I go, we're going to make good. This is one where you can use London if you want, but I'm curious about it because my second book is all about relationships and money. Mm-hmm. And so just seeing like your mom's success and the financial success she had, and then some of the stuff you just said about your dad. When you think about how you look for a partner moving forward, do you think it's a challenge when you have one person that is just dominating financially and dominating career? Or do you think it can work from a compatibility standpoint? It just has to be the right type of communication and style. I guess, what is your take when the worlds of relationships, professional life, and personal life collide as one, given what you've seen with mom and dad?
It's, well, to be clear, my parents got divorced before I even like knew.
Okay.
Like I was like under 1 year old.
Okay.
So
okay.
I never like saw them together, but then my mom has been in other relationships that I've seen, and I do think that having like a big disparity between how much people make in a relationship, especially like when it's the opposite gender roles than are like
traditional,
considered traditional.
Yeah. Which is changing drastically, but you're right, right?
I do think that adds like a big strain, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that it can't work. It's just, it requires a lot of communication. And like, I have dated people that are way more wealthy than me, and also people that I've literally like paid for every Uber, paid for every dinner, all of that stuff. And I think that in those relationships, there's it's always conversation that needs to be had.
Okay. I think that's a very fair answer. We've talked about your relationship with money. Let's do a little rapid fire. What is one thing that you think you spend too much money on, but no matter what, you'll keep spending it on that thing? It could be anything. It could be travel, restaurants. One thing you think you spend too much money on, but you'll continue to spend no matter what, because that's, you know, it's there.
My gym and workout classes.
Okay. That's a good
one. Because my gym and workout classes is probably number one, and then therapy number two. And I think that those things, it's an investment in myself that is worth it forever and always.
Okay. Let me take a stab in the dark. Gym and workout classes, if that's your number one, I'm going to say you go all in pretty good. $1,500 a month?
I honestly think less than that. I have an Equinox membership.
Yeah. So that's like
I get invited to a lot of stuff through work, like classes through work. And other than that, I maybe take like a few classes outside of Equinox.
Okay. So less than that. That's great. And then stay tuned to the recap. We'll talk about how you can actually deduct workouts and exercise from your income, especially in the space you're in. So stay tuned to the recap. Now you're going to have to listen to the recap. Yeah. All right, let's transition to some of your work stuff and something that's extremely relevant to the work you're doing. You were just doing a campaign with Hailey Bieber and for her new line, Road. And I think people, especially people that listen to this podcast, are like, how the hell? Hannah Berner is like now best friends with Hailey Bieber and Justin Bieber. Kit Keaton's up there doing work with Hailey Bieber, like hand in hand, doing pictures, posts. Talk to us how that comes to light behind the scenes business-wise.
Okay, so let's be clear. I don't work with Road in a paid sense.
Okay.
So that was not an ad.
Okay.
But for an event like that, they will like reach out to talent, to influencers, and have us come like for a brand like that where Hailey Bieber is the face.
Yep.
And they have like a celebrity backing. I think they use that obviously to their benefit. And they know that influencers will come because they're either fans of Hailey or because they know that that content will perform well.
Okay.
So, I mean, even for me, like going to that, I'm such a fan of Hailey and I love the product.
Yeah.
But I also knew that like going there and getting that content would perform well on my channel. Yeah. So it's absolutely worth it for me.
Did it perform well?
Yeah.
Okay. Of course it did. So behind the scenes there, the idea behind Hailey Bieber's team is they're like, we're going to get enough really credible, highly engaged influencers there will know that they'll want to be there because Justin and Hailey are there. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, we're not going to have to pay them. They're going to get the content, but their company is going to have a huge splash for impressions. Like that's the business and the numbers behind it. Mm-hmm. Got it. With your clothing line that you released in 2018 titled Kit, did you guys do anything similar to that from an influencer standpoint?
So that was a project that I was working on in college. And it was such a fun project for me because I think I've always looked up to my mom and her brand. And there were times when I was like, I obviously appreciate the fashion industry so much, but I think I didn't really understand like the business side of it. So doing that, like launching a line and learning about production and manufacturing and shipping and all the like not so glamorous, not so fun side of the fashion industry was really helpful for me because I realized number one, I probably don't want to do that.
Okay.
Like long-term as a career. And number two, it just made me realize like, wow, my mom works really hard. And like her company is like a well-oiled machine that has been working so well for like since the 80s. So it was a big learning experience overall for me.
Okay, got it. One thing you just said, I've looked up to my mom and her brand. And then there was another quote from a podcast and she said, these are her words. I run a business. My philosophy is more about making something special, really special clothes, but present it in an epic, entertaining, never seen before way and a little bit dangerous. Your response to her was, your brand is all about adventure. So that makes sense. Mm-hmm. How would you define what your brand is and what you want it to be?
I think I have a balance of, I think I have like my niche is really between fashion and style and then food and like the food and beverage space. So I think I have like a really fun niche that I get to play in a lot because I think there's a lot of overlap between fashion and cooking. And I've loved like exploring that space because it is, there's in making a garment, my mom and I talk about this all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a very similar process to how I create a recipe and like finish a dish. And they're both, it's both like a really fun creative process that I think I have learned from her and I've been able to make into my brand.
We love to talk numbers on Trading Secrets, so listen to this one. Every week, people watch 17 hours of online video and 5 million hours of video are uploaded to YouTube. Why? Video drives results. Videos are twice as likely to be shared and can increase conversions by up to 80%. Video is the dominant way your audience wants to consume content from you. So if you have a brand, if you have a business, if you are just trying to get a message out, video is going to be your answer. So what can help you keep up and stand out? Storyblocks. Why Storyblocks? So Storyblocks offers unlimited downloads of diverse and high quality media for one predictable subscription cost. So you could say goodbye to these expensive pay-per-clip pricing, but Storyblocks curates this library of everything you need to create a high quality video all in one place. They have over 1 million 4K HD footage, templates, music, sound effects, images, and more. So imagine you see these videos, you see the B-roll, you see the images, you see all this stuff. You can get this in Storyblocks, which is so beneficial to creating. So if you want to create a video, you want to go viral, go to Storyblocks. And for a limited time, get 3 additional months free if you sign up with an annual individual license plan. Just go to storyblocks.com/tradingsecrets to take advantage of this exclusive offer, only available until the end of May 2024. The offer won't appear at checkout, but rest assured it will be automatically added to your account shortly after you sign up. Storyblocks.com/tradingsecrets.
Okay, and you've made it into your brand, and I also read that you've teamed up with your mom to release a line that's fashion forward with aprons and oven mitts.
Yeah.
From like a business perspective, how has that done selling items like that aligned with your brand?
Yeah, I love that collab because I mean, honestly, these days, my mom and I don't get to work together a lot.
Yeah.
So working on that was really, really fun. And I just loved it because what I love about fashion is that like you are creating, you're pulling an idea out of thin air and you're like going through this crazy process of sketching and samples and manufacturing and finally getting to the final product.
Okay.
And it's such a long process that I'm not used to because my creative process is with cooking and like at most it might take a day yeah. to make something and like maybe a marinade overnight, but like it's not such a long process. So for me, that was like really fun because I got to be so involved in something that was there were a lot more iterations. It took okay. a longer time. There were so many people involved. And so for me, it was nice to see like that process and how long it takes to build a garment.
Yeah. Is that business still running? Are you still selling those items?
So that was a collaboration that my mom and I did that we sold on her website.
Okay. When you do, someone just doesn't know, when you do a collaboration like that, do you create a certain amount of supply and then once it's sold out, you're just done?
Yeah, that's usually how okay. influencer collabs work, like with fashion brands or with any product. It's usually like set amount of product is created. The influencer will help promote that product and then it will be sold out. And then sometimes like I have a friend who does hair rollers
okay.
and she did a collab with Luxie Hair, which is a hair brand. And they sold out of the product, and then now they have the opportunity to do another collaboration.
Got it.
Maybe with a different product, or, you know, introducing the same product again in a different iteration or whatever.
Okay.
So I think that's normally how it works.
Okay. For people that are curious but don't know, do you usually make more money if you get, we were at Grey Goose yesterday. Let's just say Grey Goose. I know it's not a deal. I know it's not an ad, mm-hmm. but let's just say Grey Goose gives you a flat fee to do a TikTok and an Instagram post.
I think you have to be 26 to work with alcohol brands.
Oh, wow. There you go. Is that the
27.
case? 27. Okay.
Oh, 25.
That's the FTC guideline. Okay. So you're not doing Grey Goose. That's even better for the example. But suppose you were, mm-hmm. and you're going to charge them a rate for like two posts, two TikToks. Or you're going to do a collab in which you say, I'm going to do two posts, two TikToks. So your deliverables are the same. Which typically do you end up making more money on? A signature collection or like a straight up brand deal?
Usually, I mean, it depends on what the payout is for the collab.
Okay.
Because sometimes it's a flat fee.
Okay.
And then sometimes it's a like rev share situation.
Got it.
So you're okay. making commission on every single product that's sold.
Okay.
Or sometimes it's a flat fee. So there is, if you're doing a rev share collab, there's mm-hmm. there's opportunity for a lot of money to be made.
Got it.
But in terms of like a flat fee collab versus just a post collab,
yeah,
like brand deal, those can be the exact same amount of money.
Got it. Makes sense. When you look into your like year, like as you plan for 2024, do you create certain financial goals or brand goals? Like what does your business mm-hmm. look like? Do you say like, I want to make $1 million this year? Or do you say, I want to make sure I land a year deal with Gucci? And again, I'm making this off the top of my mm-hmm. head, but how do you like plan for your business either from a financial perspective or like strategic goals? Like when you look into 2024?
Yeah, I have a financial advisor, which is honestly like the best thing that I've ever done for my business because I don't know a lot about this. Mm-hmm. And again, I am 24, so there's still a lot more time for me to learn.
I read an article, sorry to interrupt. I just read an article, Wall Street Journal, that I'm going to ask you, at what age do you think the average American feels like they've reached where they need to reach when it comes to understanding finances and money? What age do you think it is?
When they retire.
It's different categories for everything, but just like personal finance, it was 54.2. That's the average age people feel like they have a grasp on it. So when you say 24, like you're way ahead of the eight ball. But
I think the point of it is to say that like, if you don't know what you're doing, it's really helpful to outsource.
Yeah.
So I know that I don't know what I'm doing a lot of the time. And so I have help.
Okay.
But in terms of like goals, I set financial goals, like, you know, dollar amounts.
Sure.
And then I also set like, I want to have this many year-long partners that I'm working with, like contracts. And then in terms of like the, in terms of meeting the overall.
Yeah.
Other than that, then I think about like monthly, how many other deals that I should try to fit in there and agree to.
Got it. Okay. And so is it fair to say that every year you think that your revenue has increased since you got off the show, or have there been setbacks at all?
So my manager is in the corner and she's saying it's exponentially grown.
Exponentially grown. Really? Wow. What year has been the biggest like increase year over year? So 2022. And so for everyone can't hear, Kit's manager is in the room. What is your name again? One more time. Shayna Davis. And do you own your management company?
Yeah.
Okay. What's it called? Ponte Firm. Let's give a little shout out here. So shout out Ponte Firm. So year 2022 was significantly better than 2021. That was one of the biggest jump. And then 2023 will be better than 2022.
Yes.
Okay. If you had to attribute one thing to just like Kit's business execution performance that has done that, or it could be outside factors that's not necessarily related to Kit's execution, what would you say the number one thing that's caused the big increase?
One, the major thing there is that I grew exponentially in followers from being on The Bachelor.
Right.
Which is obviously that changes like how much I get paid for every deal.
Yep.
Because at the end of the day, it is about numbers. But also, I think that when we started working together, I was doing, I didn't really have a niche.
Yeah.
I was doing like a lot of lifestyle and just like a lot of outfit content, like styling content.
Yeah.
But I didn't really have a niche. And I think once I found my niche by sharing my recipes and my cooking content, that was when I was able to build like a really strong and committed community.
Yeah.
That is helpful in like continuing to grow,
right,
year over year. Because I think we see a lot of people like in the Bachelor world who might go on a show, gain a ton of followers. Mm. But then if you don't cultivate a brand and have a committed community,
yes,
that is, it's only like I've seen friends of mine lose followers over time because it's just like they're losing relevancy and they're not creating a longer term strategy and community.
Yeah, I think because relevancy is so hard, especially in the business world, to keep up with, mm-hmm, but community's not. Like, mm-hmm, building a niche, building a powerful brand, and building a community isn't as hard as it is to keep up relevancy. And when you keep that community, whether you're in a headline or not, whether you're relevant or not, they stay with you.
If you have a community, you're always relevant.
Always to that community,
yes,
right? Which is huge. And that's obviously a huge reason why you've had the success you've had, which is pretty cool. When you look at, and I don't know who I should ask this to. Should I ask this? Which direction here?
I could probably answer.
But TikTok or Instagram, which one, if your financial advisor looks at, mm-hmm, your revenue and says, this money came in from TikTok, this money came in from Instagram, which one is larger?
So this is changing so quickly.
Okay.
Like last year, absolutely Instagram. Instagram, okay, all the way.
Like four times, three times, if you had to guess.
Probably like three times.
Okay.
Maybe four, honestly. And then this year, I've like really been trying to grow my audience on TikTok. And I've like finally found my groove, okay, with it. And I still have a lot of room to grow for sure. But I think there's like less of a disparity now between my Instagram following and my TikTok. And I have a little bit of a different community over on TikTok, which is, okay, really fun for me. So this year will be like the first year where I think those will be way more equal.
Okay. So it's starting,
Instagram is
starting
still higher
to shift a little
just
bit.
Just because I, okay, have more followers on Instagram.
Okay. Gotcha.
But it's definitely starting to balance out.
It's starting to balance out.
Year.
Okay. I like that.
And there's just a lot more opportunities on TikTok now.
Right.
Like last year, even there were so many brands it was still a wild, wild west. Like people were scared to do sponsored content on TikTok.
Yeah.
Brands were scared to do sponsored content and ads on TikTok because of the guidelines were kind of unclear. And there was,
sure,
just like, how much are people getting paid and whatever.
Yeah.
And this year I feel like so many brands, I will even ask some brands,
yeah,
like, if I don't feel like the partnership fits well on Instagram, I'll be like, okay, can we maybe shift this to TikTok? And they're way more open than they were.
Interesting.
Like, in previous years.
Okay, that's pretty cool. All right, Instagram versus TikTok, you got your answer. You and your mom had the Ageless podcast. I, mm-hmm, saw that there has been an episode since 2022. Mm-hmm. Was that a profitable business venture? Would you recommend podcasting? Do you have a take on getting into, mm-hmm, that space?
I think podcasting is like anything else, it's kind of the grass is green where you water it.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's a good training secret right there.
The grass is always greener
where you water it.
Where you water it. And so for me, I think that we just didn't have like enough time or infrastructure to like make that project long term and amazing.
Okay.
But I love guesting on podcasts. I love talking. I love learning. I love listening to podcasts. So I think, yeah, I know podcasting is super successful and,
okay,
like a great,
gotcha,
path.
Are you and mom going to continue it?
I don't think so right,
okay,
now.
Okay, different direction for Kit.
If you are selling something online, I have a solution for you. It is Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell anything and everything online at any stage of your business, from the launch of your online shop stage to the first real live store stage. We're going to hear Kit talk a little bit about that, all the way to, did we just hit a million order stage? Shopify has everything that you need to grow. Shopify helps turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best conversion checkout at 36%. 36%. That conversion rate is absolutely incredible. I tell you what, if influencers get 36% conversion rate on their views, holy smokes. And they also power 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. So what do? Just sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/secrets, all lowercase. Just go to shopify.com/secrets now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/secrets.
Yeah.
All right. I want to get into the whole fashion world. We talked a little bit about Sophia Richie. We talked a little bit about quiet luxury before the podcast. Let's start with this for the people listening, the consumers that need to look up to someone like you to help with what's happening in the fashion world. Let's get into some consumer talk. What right now is trending in the fashion world for people that don't know, like where they should shop next or what they should look for, what's in?
Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely. I think trends in general have become way more fragmented because of TikTok.
Okay.
And just because like there's so many influencers now that you can really find your niche community. Yeah. And like there's trends and subtrends and like sub-subtrends and all of these little communities that are just like building and iterating off. But so trends aren't as centralized as they used to be, like in fashion. But I know number one, I would say right now is probably clean girl aesthetic, like Sophia Richie core, which is what you're talking about.
Yep.
Quiet luxury.
Yep.
Just moving away from logo mania and like when people were really obsessed with wearing like Supreme and Gucci and like branded names all over everything, which to me is still super cool. It's not my style, but it's super sick. And I think for me at the end of the day, like you really shouldn't, your style should be timeless in a sense that it should not just like follow whatever's trending right now.
Okay.
Thank gosh, what is trending right now is kind of that timeless style. It's like basic, you know, vintage vibes.
Mm-hmm.
But it has been in the past, like, obviously way more out there and like gaudy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you are still on that, good for you. But I'm supportive of the quiet luxury trend.
Okay. People that are out there that want to fit in with what's fashion forward, but they don't have as much expendable income, where would you tell them to shop? What should they look for as a consumer? Where can they go to get something that still has a nice fashion cut to it? But right now, inflation, things are expensive. They just can't afford some of the high brands.
Vintage and consignment is number one. I think like you can obviously find amazing, reliable pieces like on the RealReal or on Depop. I also work with a company called Pickle, which they do like clothing rentals in New York. So you can help like keep a revolving wardrobe in that way. But yeah, I think people, a lot of times I get this question about like affording just the high cost of having like a super stylish wardrobe.
Yep.
And it really does not have to be that way. And I think the answer to that question is oftentimes like, oh, well, Zara has good options and whatever. But it's like those things are going to fall apart.
Totally.
In a year. So if something is vintage or like you're getting it at a secondhand store, you know that it's already had a whole life.
Okay.
And it's been like, it's had a whole, like it's survived that life and now it's going to like continue to serve you. So that's probably where you want to look for like high-end items that are going to stand the test of time.
Okay. What is one piece of clothing that was a high-end item? How much did you spend on it that was like the worst purchase? You're like, that was Zara type quality. That was shit.
Ooh. Oh my gosh. This is so funny, but I have lived like so many different lives and aesthetics online just because I grew up like on social media.
Yeah.
And when I was in high school and I started Instagram, I had a very different aesthetic than I do now.
Okay.
I was like definitely way more edgy. I had like colored hair and I was like in a sort of New York City like subculture that was very skate and like art focused.
Okay.
And I remember I bought this pair of Bape sneakers, which were like, I bought them on eBay and they were so expensive for me at the time because I was like spending my own money that was like I earned from a summer job. And I remember I think they were like $700 or $800.
Okay.
And I got them from eBay and they were like definitely fake because I wore them like a few times and they were just like falling apart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, whoa, I can't believe I did this to myself. That's so bad. So now when I'm like buying secondhand, I try to go from an authenticated source.
Okay. So be careful with eBay. Yeah. Zara, it might look good, but it might be gone within 6 months to a year. So you won't get your money's worth. And then I think what you just said at the end is really, really important. Consumers out there that are buying an authenticated source, how does someone know if it's an authenticated source?
I mean, there's certain companies that...
Okay, so like, credible companies.
Yeah,
like you would know.
The Real Real or like right. Rebag or
okay.
some of those.
Those are them. All right, before we get your trading secret, I wanted to ask you your best marquee deal. Whatever information you could share about it. It's either a paid opportunity for speaking or posting or showing up somewhere or something you look back at your influencing career, you're like, this is my Grammy. Like mm-hmm. this was it for me. What was the best deal you've done?
It's definitely, it hasn't come yet, for
oh,
sure.
Oh, interesting.
I think that okay. there's, like, it has yet to come, for sure.
Okay.
But I do have some, like, longer-term partners that I, whenever I get a new opportunity,
yeah.
I'm, like, forever grateful. And one of them is American Express.
Cool.
So I have loved working with them. And I've worked with them, like, a few years in a row. And I just like love how much they have supported my work in the food and beverage space as well.
Okay.
And they're super flexible for a company that like has to have all the hashtags and all the guidelines and all of that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I heard American Express actually at their US Open suite has a dress code.
Ooh.
I heard like to be in the American Express suite, you have to like wear a certain type of style and they like send it to the guests.
I have noticed dress codes so much more recently, like in recent years, just even at like membership clubs in New York and like all of that. And everyone at first I think was really against it and like tried to push against it.
Okay.
But maybe it's because I didn't have a uniform in high school, but like I love a dress code.
Okay.
Number one, I think I dress like...
You meet the dress code anyway.
I meet the dress code. But I also think it's like, it's really great to go somewhere and know that everyone is like dressed in their Sunday's best there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like when I was living in LA, I think I would see people going out all the time in just like jeans and sneakers.
Yeah.
Like, to the nicest clubs in LA.
Yep.
And I would always wear dresses and heels and stuff. And people, why are you wearing that?
Right.
But I love like going somewhere and seeing everyone in like a suit jacket and like, I don't want to see sneakers when I'm out or like whatever. I just think it's really nice.
That's why you loved London.
Once in a while.
That's why London was such a good vibe for
you.
Because they're all dressed up. All right, let's end with this. Tell me this. You can manifest. You haven't got that Grammy deal yet. If you like paint that Grammy deal, what brand is it? And like, what can you, if you can share, you don't have to, if you don't want to, like the ideal dollar amount you want to get in that next big deal. For example, I'll give you one for me. Mine, I'm going to say, let's think about this long and hard. I'm going to go. I want right now Capital One. I've worked with them before on a year deal. And I want Capital One to sponsor my book. So I want them to be behind my second book. I want them to sponsor the tour and like all the podcasts I do, like a whole segment, all Capital One. And I want it to be, I'm going to say $300,000. That's my, I'm manifesting it.
Okay.
Give me one for you if you don't mind.
Okay. I think for me, I would want it to be a big box brand, like a Target.
Okay.
And I would want it to be a cookware line with like a big box brand so that my product can get into the hands of younger people in like a more affordable way. And I would want it to be a rev share deal.
Rev share, so, see? Smart. Okay.
Yeah.
What percentage of rev would you want from it? Perfect world.
20%.
20%? The goal would be to make seven figures on it?
Yeah.
There you go. Kick key to dreaming big. I got to dream bigger. I just know Capital One isn't going to give me a percentage of their rev, but I like it. That's a good marquee deal. All right, Kit, one trading secret. So a trading secret, someone couldn't learn in a textbook. They couldn't learn from Google or YouTube. They can only learn from you, given your experience. It could be about money management, career management, life management. It's just one trading secret they can only get from Kit Keenan. What can you leave us with?
I have one that one of my best friends told me, and it's, you can be annoying or you can be unemployed. And it's really about the fact that, like, you don't be worried about following up. Don't be worried about being annoying. Like, put yourself out there, because you can either sit back and be quiet and not be annoying, or you can, like, be annoying to the right person and probably get your dream job or dream partnership or dream brand deal or whatever.
I think that's a great quote. And even, like, you think about the influencing world. Mm-hmm. There might be some hate out there. People are like, oh, that's annoying. You can be annoying or you can be unemployed. And the people that are trying to please everyone and the people that aren't following up and the people that aren't doing the stuff you got to do to be out there and be in front of things, they might be on their way to being unemployed or being stuck in a track they don't want to be, right? Handcuffed to a desk, a job, a career they don't want to be in. I think that's a great trade secret, one we've never had before. Kit, if people want to learn more from you, follow what's going on with your cooking, seeing everything you got going on, where can they find you?
My Instagram and my TikTok are at Kit Keenan.
At Kit Keenan. And watch out in the next year, Target coming your way.
Let's see.
She's putting it out there. Kit Keenan will be in Target. We're putting it out there right now. Kit, thank you for being on Trading Secrets.
Thanks for having me.
Ding, ding, ding. We are closing in the belt. Whoa. Let's just take a little breather there. David, I can't wait to hear what you think, because that might be the worst ding, ding, ding we've ever heard. But also, that's about 15 cities in 4 weeks, 7 stops at the book tour, sold out at every single stop. We got Boston left. The crowds have been absolutely phenomenal. Can't tell you how unbelievable it's been, but you could hear it's starting to take a little bit of a toll on me. So let me try to finish that recap intro one more time. We got Kit Keenan on the podcast, an absolute legend. Mother is well known internationally for her fashion design work, and Kit Keenan is an absolute star from reality TV gone creator. So before my voice completely goes hoarse, curious Canadian, David Ardoin, how are you? We missed you on the ones and twos last week. You're back better than ever now. How are we doing?
We're doing great. And you know what, Jay? Don't be too hard on yourself with that voice. You earned that voice. You earned that voice. I've been seeing the stories. You've been ripping up and down the aisles. Great reviews. I'm seeing great reviews on the book tour. Congratulations. And now you got a couple stops left. And yes, I definitely missed being on the recap last week. I thought the Colton episode was great. And here we are back on the ones and twos. We got Kit. I thought it was a great episode. I'm going to just come out of the gate shooting right away. You good with that?
I'm good with that, but I will say, I feel like we should just acknowledge for a second, you know, we should just acknowledge for a second. This was a big week for both of us. If you think about, you know, where we go and what we do and everything that's happened. Let's just start with number one, book launch, right? We're on Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen. We're on two sections of Good Morning America, Forbes, you know, Bloomberg, Cheddar TV, NBC Now. We are just ripping and rolling. We hit 7 of the book tour stops, all which has gone great. We got a second episode we're now releasing for the podcast. For everyone listening right now, we're calling it More Than Money. Danica came up with that. We will have something with Danica. If we stay with that, if you have a better show name than More Than Money, let us know. That'll be out every single Thursday. This week, we have a founder of a health supplement company talking all about the supplements you should take and shouldn't take and what exactly you need to look for and how to consume. So that'll be a good one. And David, you had your nationals for your hockey team. That's a big week for the boys.
It was. It was in Las Vegas for a week. Anytime you're in Las Vegas for a week, it's too much time in Las Vegas. Very proud of my team.
Did you gamble?
We did well. I did. I hit the tables a little bit. I actually came out up a little bit, just a hair. So that's always a good too. Roulette, rolling your numbers. 19 hit a couple times there.
Love.
Had to.
All right, well, but, big week for the boys. Let's get into it, though.
Yeah, let's get into it. And I got to say, too, you know what? I was going to come out shooting out of the gate. Jay, your second book tour, just really quickly. I was a big part of the first one, and I went on those media stops. Does it feel different the second time around? And if it does, do you think that's contributed to the purpose of the book about relationship and finances? Do you think that's hitting a little more than the Restart Roadmap, or what do you think it is?
It's definitely hitting more because it impacts people more, right? The Restart Roadmap is all about changing your career. Some people are really happy within their career. Some people don't want to change. When it comes to love and money, we know that all of us have an area for improvement, and all of us have experienced either hard relationship failures or hard money failures, almost everyone. So it opens up the conversation. That's the one thing I'll say is like the intimacy of conversation. We have had dates happen because of this live show. We have had business deals happen because of this live show. We have had a few business transactions close because of this. Like, there has been so much happening from conversations that have been done. And in every stop, it looks as though like one or two people at the end come up and say that they met someone who's a friend. But the biggest difference, David, is before we talk money on this podcast, we were out of pocket. We were just trying to break even. This, we have an unbelievable sponsor, Capital One Cafe, who is literally flying a production team around to all eight stops. We have like 8 to 10 people at every single stop doing everything, dress rehearsal, stage, audio, video, everything. Like, it is so different than last tour. It's hard to even compare, but it's like the band that's like literally playing at bars, you know, to the band that like gets the incredible gig and they just literally show up and start playing.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Couple more. Wish you all the best. Hope the voice can hold up for a couple more shows, but I got faith in you. So without further ado, let's get into Kid. I thought it was a great episode.
Yeah, I thought so too. I mean, really impressed by Kit. Obviously has done a lot, comes from a family of a ton of success. So I'm curious what you think. Let's hear it.
Well, let's start at the top here. Cynthia Rowley is her mother's name. I did a little Google machine work. We always know net worths are a little subject to change here. You know what she's famous for, a fashion designer, internationally known. I'm going to say net worth, that it says on the Google machine. You're going to give me over under $100 million net worth, Cynthia Rowley.
I'm going to guess over. That's my guess.
Wow.
She is a monster in the space. Go ask your parents if they know Cynthia Rowley, or ask anyone that knows fashion. She is an absolute icon. It's only a guess, of course. No facts here, but I'm saying over.
Because I was 100 million really shocked me. I thought that was a lot. So that's good. But we're going to connect that to the next question, which I think you said it a million times. I don't know the exact definition, but I have a feel. She referenced herself as a Nepo baby, or that she wasn't a Nepo baby. Nepo, Nepa, I don't know if I'm saying that exactly correct, but what is the exact definition or an example of someone who would be a Nepo baby? And what does Nepo stand for?
So Nepo stands for nepotism. And so Nepo is someone who's like essentially treated better within their career because of mom and dad being like super famous or super successful, right? So the whole implication of Nepo baby is that person is not as, you know, they don't have as much talent, or they don't have as much success without their parents. It's their family that brings them the success they have. Think of like, I don't know, you can think of any family. Like, think about the kids of Donald Trump. You can think of, I don't know, help me think about a family where I'm blanking on this right now. But
anyone that you went to school with that has parents, and the kid just after college just goes work for the family.
Went into that career. Yeah, that's a micro example, right? Okay. Now, this is like another, like Nepo, what I'm thinking right now is like, okay, like the Kennedys or like the Bushes or like, just think about like these massive families like that have so much success from their originator of found fame or wealth. Those are like considered a Nepo baby, right? Who wouldn't be a Nepo baby? Jeff Bezos, right? Like self-made multi-billionaire, right? Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. Sticking on the parent theme, she talked about her parents being separated, and really understanding and being able to see two sides of money. Obviously, mom very well off, and she talked a lot about how her dad didn't have money and had money problems. She talked a lot about going to therapy for two reasons. One, just finding and understanding that she is enough, but two, she went to therapy for her relationship with money. I was really curious if you've heard people go to therapy for relationship with money. I know this ties a little bit back into the book. And is that something that you've had to do in your therapy sessions, or that over, or do you recommend that that's a good place to get more comfortable with this topic of money?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the behaviors that we execute on when it comes to money, whether it is lying, whether it is stealing, whether it is hiding, whether it's people pleasing, whether it's certain types of spending, all connects to behaviors and learned behaviors. And there are things as financial psychologists. Those exist. And what they do, David, is they address emotional underpinnings of the financial decisions that we make. So it's like, okay, when we make poor choices, what is the behavioral action that's occurring? What's happened before, during, and after that these financial decisions are made? Because usually it is an actual connection to emotion that's doing that. So financial therapists are actually a real thing, and they do exist. And I thought it was really cool that she opened up about that, especially like this is a difference too. We always hear the one side. We hear the side of individuals that are working so hard and can't get enough and they're trying to pay off their debt. And that's like the classic example of where we try to put solutions in. But the difference in this one, which is really interesting, is this is someone who actually comes from, and of course, privilege and comes from so much wealth. And I think she totally recognizes that. But she is still dealing with her own battles of being like, well, I want to do it for myself. I want to build my own thing. I don't want to live under the shadow of mom. I want to be my own person while still respecting mom. And this is like a different type of scenario that we've seen on this show.
I do love how she has such great perspective of her age too, being 24 years old. Like, she's okay not having all the answers, but also, you know, wants to grow and mature into who she is. One thing that she also brought up, that she used example from her mom and in her own life, is how when people have drastic opposing incomes, how much strain it can put on a relationship. Now, I believe that, right? I've never been in a situation where it's impacted me. My question is to you, Jason, single Jason, been single for almost a year now. Your first time really single while having a more established income, net worth, et cetera. Do you agree with that? Have you found that in your dating life that, you know, when you meet someone with opposing incomes, especially in your lifestyle, has it put any kind of strain on our relationship or maybe even a potential relationship?
I think that's such a good question. I think there was one scenario where that might have happened, but I think it's more of like understanding, like it's more of just understanding what is and what isn't acceptable based right. on where you guys are at and how you're at, because I think the biggest concern becomes the gray area of not talking about it. There was a situation though, it was like 2 weeks of good dating someone who this like made materially less, right? And for me, I didn't get frustrated at all. But what I wanted to do was I noticed I really wanted to help that person, like yeah. help them negotiate and help them improve. And like, I was very yeah. invested in trying to like help accelerate because they wanted to. And they had no interest in hearing or doing anything that I suggested, like none. And that created a little frustration to me because it wasn't about the dollar amount at all, but it was more of like, hey, like you're telling me about these concerns and I'm just making a few suggestions of things that you could do. But there was just like, absolutely, like kind of like almost annoyed that I would offer that. But that's the only thing I would say yeah. that constrained. Because other than that, we had like, okay, if we go do this, we'll do this and vice versa.
It's an interesting take because you would have thought it's like, well, I travel a lot and I need someone who can keep up with maybe spontaneously being able to book trips to see me or see that. But it's so interesting you answered that from a take of you know, you wanting to help them and using your knowledge and expertise, but in a relationship setting, them not wanting that aspect of you in their relationship. So that's really interesting. One thing that a stat that you threw at us in the interview that I loved was that most again on the theme of money, most the average age of Americans when they finally feel comfortable about their money situation, understanding and planning is 54.2 years old, which I just couldn't believe when I hear that, but it also makes perfect sense. She talked how she has a financial advisor at 24 years old. She said it's the best thing she's done for her and her businesses. I've always thought that I'm probably not doing myself and my family a disservice by not having a financial advisor. Is that true, Jay? Do you think? Do you think that everyone should have one, even middle class people, like, you know, your average incomes? And how much do they cost? And do they charge a fee? Do they charge an hourly rate? Do they charge maybe a percentage of income gained on investments? Educate me a little bit on financial advisors, because I don't think it's an area where we've really talked about it for like the common folk.
Do you currently work with a financial advisor? I'm curious.
No, I don't. I don't. That's why I feel like I should be. And I just, again, I'm not 54.2 years old yet. So maybe when I am, the light bulb will go off and I'll go get one. But right now I just don't. And I'm really just genuinely curious.
And how, let me ask you this, how, like, cause you know, your family has done well. Ashley's family's done well. Do you ever talk to them? Like who do they work with?
Yeah, my mom has one. I'm sure my father-in-law has one, but I haven't really dove into who, how much, what will they do for us, et cetera. No.
Okay. All right. I do believe like at least having those conversations with mom and dad and family members is good, because you can learn from what they've done and mistakes they've made and then places they've had trust. In chapter 10 of the book, I actually talk all about the exact process of all the options out there and then where you can go based on what you're looking for. And then if you choose to look for a financial advisor, step by step of exactly the questions you have to ask. But to answer your question, the fee structures are based on usually the following. There's percentage of assets under management. So based on the assets that are under management, they take a percentage. As those assets go up, you can negotiate a lower percentage. There are financial advisors that charge an hourly rate. Those are great because they're not connected at all to incentivizing you to be in a certain investment that pays them a better commission structure. Mm-hmm. There's some that have fixed fees, which are just like predetermined amounts for the service. And then there are some that make commissions. So it's additional compensation that is earned when a purchase or trade or success in the portfolio is made on top of other structures. And then there's performance-based fees. Again, so that's another fee that's done based on an outlined benchmark of performance. Like, if we do this, we then get this. So there's a lot of different ways that people get paid off it. But the biggest thing is you got to make sure you're comparing to others, because those percentages can vary drastically based on who you're working with.
Do you have one, a financial advisor?
I do. So this is like, I had to outsource. I just don't have the time for it. Like, I don't have the time anymore, right? So I work with, I have a few options. Like, I use a robo-advisor. I use a brokerage myself. I have my 401k plans that are still through my employer because of the selection that they had. So I just kept those investments. And then I have UBS. So UBS, I was able to negotiate a 0.7% commission rate. So they pay, assets under management. So whatever assets are under their management, based on what they're doing for those, they get 0.7% fee. However, if it's sitting in cash or it's sitting in a stock or any type of investment vehicle I had before I started working with them, that is not charged. So they have this treasury fund over there that I'm getting close to 6% sitting on cash, and I don't pay any fee for that.
Oh, wow.
But David, the benefit is like, anytime something happens, I get a full report for the week of what's going on.
Yeah.
Something happens in the market, they call me. Hey, S&P is down 150 basis points. This is what we want to do today. This is how we want to do it. I also get advantages for lending. I can like lend off my assets. It's like banking on steroids. And if you find the right people in the right places, it can change your life for the good.
And it's just bringing those types of things top of mind when, like you said, you're so busy, there's no way you're going to be able to collect that information, process it, and act on it. They do it for you. So that's unbelievable. Makes me want to go hang up this phone call right now on the recap and go get a financial advisor. But I got one last question for you that I found kind of interesting is, you guys both talked about your careers and the word influencer and how you still to this day don't exactly love, you know, saying that or leading with that is an aspect of what you do. And she said that as well for a big start of what she was doing. But then I got thinking, and we brought up on this podcast before, that the youth in this country at over an 89% rate put being an influencer as their dream job in this country. So what I'm going to ask you is, where do you think the disconnect is between the people who are in it and doing it and so like almost embarrassed to say that they're doing it, but people at the next generation want to be that so bad would do anything to say that that's what they do for a job. Why do you think there's a disconnect, and what do you think it'll take for those two worlds to kind of meet in the middle, where this becomes, you know, less of a taboo career?
I think it's like, it's just social acceptance, right? I think our generation never grew up hearing this term. We were introduced to it at a time that I think cringe was associated with it. And I think now it's to the point, quite frankly, if I'm being honest, it went from like cringe to envy, where the people in our age group and maybe older almost are envious and jealous of the lifestyle, the money that's associated with it. It's immediately met with not negative connotation. Oh, it must be nice to just run around all over the place and take videos, or, oh, you don't pay for anything. Must be just free life. Like, I think it is when you introduce a massive change like this, it goes through these stages of like cringe to just pure envy. And so I feel like for majority, not everybody, majority of millennials, baby boomers, it's met with negative connotation. And I think it will for quite some time. You know, I think there's, you can always look at any type of change and find negative in it with like, they'll shut the door off and that'll be done soon, or this won't last, or you won't last. Like, it's an easy thing to do. Where I think the early generation, like, this is what they were born with. They were born with the iPads in hand. They were born with the, you know, looking at mom and dad's phone. Social media is literally the only way that they interact. When they're gaming online, it's how they build communities and how they build friendships. Like, their whole way of life is actually centered around it. So they know nothing else and would expect nothing else. And the people that they look up to as quote unquote influencers or creators are actually their celebrities. The celebrities we used to look up for being on TV or sports teams or in movies, these are their celebrities. So I think it's got a whole different connotation. And I think I'll tell you this much. I know at least in the industry, people like think of influencers more of like an ick name as opposed to creator. People would prefer they're called the creator, but I think that's my logical breakdown of the industry. What do you think?
No, it makes perfect sense. I think, like you said, I think the envy part of it is one thing, and I think the disconnect from, you know, actually understanding what an influencer does. I mean, I've been around you enough to know, you know, on the surface, sometimes I think that I would love to do what you do. And then when I spend a weekend with you, I'm like, I could never. How many times do I say I could never do what you do? So I think that the disconnect is a big piece of that as well. But I got to end, Jay, with one trading secret that you said we had to bring up in the recap to give to the people. The trading secret, Kit talked about one thing she spends too much money on is workouts and health and wellness. You said, David, make sure you bring up in the recap how you can deduct workouts and exercise from your income. Leave us, with the trading secret of how we can all work out and do exercise classes for free.
Okay, one of two things. Check in with your company to see if they actually offer benefits. So they might be able to offer benefits through your gym provider to actually subsidize and pay for it. And secondly, if you have a company or you have a brand where working out technically is connected to revenue and to your brand, and or you're filming anything or doing anything or any form of justification where exercising in the space that you're exercising connects to your brand, you can write it off. Now check with your accountant, check with your CPA, with my CPA and the person I work with. I know that that is an actual eligible write-off. So again, you'd have to own your own company. You'd want to talk to your own accountant. This is where I talk about TurboTax Live is great, because you can instantly just have a CPA on the phone instantly and ask them the question. But yes, when you are contributing to your brand, or you think a lot of these people, like I was on the Jennifer Hudson show and she's like, Jason, I think I spend too much money on my clothes. I'm like, Jennifer, your clothes are your brand. You're writing those off anyway. 40% discount. Plus, those are the types of things I'm saying.
Yeah, she probably loved that too. Look, we went over. Maybe I'm just trying to make up for lost time not being involved in the Colton episode. I'm back in the ones and two. Hockey season is over. Podcast is going full strength, downhill, full speed, two episodes a week. Fire me up. Happy to be back here and happy to see all the success that you're having on the book tour. Close it out strong, Jay. Close it out strong.
We will close out strong. Remember to grab a copy of Talk Money to Me because we are still giving away tickets for our big party in New York City on April 19th. So make sure to grab a copy and then send us that receipt so you are entered into the raffle. And May 22nd right now is the date we're going to have a live show, Trading Secrets, in Charlotte, North Carolina. So if you can join us or you're interested in tickets, just shoot us an email, charlottenorthcarolina@tradingsecrets@jasontarek.com. Dave, you got anything else for me?
Nope, nothing else for you.
All right, it's time for me to go get a little tea and lemon honey in this throat and get back to action because we got the closeout in Boston. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Trading Secrets, one you can't afford to miss.